Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on RAE.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and I'm bringing you this show in English for Wednesday, July 30. We're going to have, as usual, the news, we're going to have some sports, and today we're going to be sharing with you an interview that I conducted back in June with Irish translator and linguist Frank Wynne, who talked to us about his work translating into English the iconic Argentine cartoon Mafalda, the comic strip. Strip Mafalda, originally created by Argentine cartoonist Kino, which is a very popular comic across the Spanish-speaking world and beyond, has been translated to tens of languages, but not to English until now. And this year is when we are finally seeing the English translation of Mafalda to English, thanks mainly to Frank Wynne, who talked to us about his work. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. This show airs on 5850 kHz on WRMI and also via internet on riot.com.ar. Let's get started now with the news. These are the headlines. According to Israeli media, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is planning a visit to Argentina to meet with his ally, President Javier Milei. Two Argentine girls were killed in a boat collision in Miami. The International Monetary Fund expects Argentina's inflation to hover around 20% this year. The remains of independence hero Juan Bautista Cabral will be transferred to his birthplace in Corrientes, and Argentine midfielder Claudio Echeverri, sidelined at Manchester City, may be headed to Roma in Italy. And these are the news. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is planning a short-term visit to Argentina to meet with his ally, President Javier Milei. The news was reported by the Jewish news agency AJN. This would mark a reciprocal gesture following Milei's trip to Israel last February. During that visit, the South American leader addressed the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, and announced plans to relocate Argentina's embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He also joined Netanyahu in launching a new direct flight service between Tel Aviv and Buenos Aires, which will be operated by Israel's national airline, El Al. The last visit to Argentina by Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was back in 2017 during the presidency of Mauricio Macri. And Argentina will end 2025 with inflation between 18 and 23%. This is according to the International Monetary Fund. The figures were published in the IMF's annual World Economic Outlook report. The Washington-based organization praised President Milei's economic policies, noting that Argentina is undergoing a strong recovery. In terms of growth, the IMF reaffirmed its projection of 5.5% GDP expansion for Argentina this year. That is the highest rate in Latin America, according to the fund's forecast, where the regional average is expected to be around 2.2%. And two Argentine girls have died in a boating accident in Miami. One of the victims has been identified as 7-year-old Mila Yankelevich, a member of a well-known family in Argentina's entertainment industry. The accident happened on Monday in Biscayne Bay when a barge struck a sailboat carrying the girls on a nautical outing. Five girls and a young woman, who was at the helm, were aboard the sailboat, according to the Miami Yacht Club. Local authorities are still investigating the circumstances of the crash. All the children aboard, including the two victims, were confirmed to be Argentine nationals. In other news, the remains of Argentine independence hero Juan Bautista Cabral will be moved to Saladas in the province of Corrientes, where he was born. Known as Sergeant Cabral, he entered history by saving the life of General José de San Martín in 1813. During the Battle of San Lorenzo, Cabral shielded San Martín, who got trapped under his horse, from an enemy spear, sacrificing his own life. His remains were buried at the site of his death in Santa Fe province, but the town of Saladas has been requesting their transfer for over 80 years. This Saturday, August 2nd, his ashes will finally be laid to rest in Corrientes in a patriotic ceremony. Due to his humble origins, little is known about his life before joining the army. According to some accounts, Cabral was of mixed race, the illegitimate son of a Creole, criollo landowner, and a slave woman of Angolan descent. And in sports, Argentine footballer Claudio Echeverri, nicknamed El Diablito, may be on his way to AS Roma in Italy. The former River Plate player was signed by Manchester City in 2024, but the team's manager, Pep Guardiola, reportedly does not plan to include him in the squad. The 19-year-old midfielder has only played 64 minutes for the English team since joining. As a result, El Diablito, as he's known, the Little Devil, has recently emerged as a potential addition to Roma. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. Well, Frank, thank you very much for this conversation with RAE, with Argentina's International Radio Service. Looking forward to talking to you because you are part of a long overdue project, which is bringing Mafalda, which is a national icon of Argentina, to the English-speaking world. And what was your first contact with Mafalda? How you came into contact with Mafalda first? Can you tell us first?
Yes, I came into contact with Mafalda not in Spanish, but in French, when I lived in France in the 1980s. I mean, I'm sure, as you know, by the late 60s, Mafalda had already been published in most European languages, in large part because she was championed and Kino was championed by Umberto Eco.
Yes.
So she was first translated into Italian and then subsequently into French and so on and so forth. So in fact, I read all of Mafalda because by the 1980s, of course, it was, you know, almost a decade after Kino had ceased to draw Mafalda.
Yes.
So in fact, I probably read everything that there was in
French.
In the 1980s. And I looked around to see if I could get an English translation so I could give it to friends, and no English language translation existed. And in fact, later I worked, so I became a translator, initially from French to English, laterally from Spanish to English, largely through translating comics, graphic novels, and so forth before I ever began translating novels. So another Argentinian comic artist called Alberto Breccia, and I, you know, also published comics in English for many years, and included, with the permission of the estate, a couple of very small strips of Mafalda. We're talking about maybe five, you know, in a magazine called Deadline. This is, I don't know, good Lord. This would be sometime in the 1990s. And at that stage, I had no idea why it had never been done. But then, you know.
Any guess? Any suspicion? Why not?
Well, okay. Mafalda. So Mafalda, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the three most important strip cartoons. They are Charles Schulz's Peanuts, Mafalda, and Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes.
The thing with Mafalda is that, unlike Peanuts, it is political, with a small p. I mean, it is not specific about its politics, but it asks complicated questions about politics.
Yes, absolutely.
It is not easy to imagine Mafalda being published in the United States in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, The Vietnam War hadn't even finished when Bao stopped drawing it. It's in the very, very first strip that he drew. And yet, you know, by the time he stopped drawing Mafalda, it was still there. But it asks difficult questions about that, about capitalism. I mean, yes, also about communism. It would have fit very strangely into the US market at the time, which is where it would have needed to go. I mean, it would have had to be serialized in a newspaper, you know, rather like Peanuts. You're taken up by a distributor like King Features, and they syndicate your work through a variety of newspapers, and you get popularity that way. Yeah. But it's not simply that it wasn't available in the US and the UK. I mean, while Mafalda was not specifically banned in Argentina, it was banned in Chile entirely.
Yes.
And in Franco's Spain, it was sold, but only in book form and with a very large sticker that says solo para adultos.
Ah, I didn't know that.
So it was important that, you know, adults whose minds hopefully could not be corrupted were allowed to read it. So Mafalda had rather a checkered history. I think by the time it would have been possible to translate and publish Mafalda in English, people simply didn't notice. Unfortunately, book publishing generally, and translation to some extent, tends to look at what is shiny and new. So, you know, the people that we are currently interested in Argentina are Samantha Schweblin, Mariana Enriquez. You know, they are the writers who are writing now.
Yes.
English language book publishing rarely thinks maybe we should go back and look at the important things that were never covered. And so, you know, about 18 months ago, Jill Schulman and Emma Raddatz at Archipelago came and asked me if I would do Mafalda. Now, I don't know specifically why they asked me. I mean, it may be because I had a background in comics publishing. Certainly, they cannot have known when they asked me how important Mafalda was to me.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know that.
No. And how, you know, I would probably have cut off a limb or something, you know, in order to be able to do all of Mafalda, which is what over the next 3 years I will do. I will do everything that Kino ever drew.
The ten books.
Yeah, all 10 books.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Looking forward to that. Now, let me go back to your first contact with Mafalda in French. Then I did some research, and then I know that you lived here in Buenos Aires for a time, and then you discovered Mafalda in Spanish in its original format, in its original context, which is Buenos Aires. How do you compare the French translation that you came, which is the first you came in contact with the original one that you discovered some years later?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, what I didn't know, you know, in reading the French, you know, I had a sense of where this took place, but at the time I had never been to Buenos Aires, let alone lived in Buenos Aires. And actually, what is so crucial about Mafalda is that, you know, she is from a lower middle class Porteña family. Susanita is the sort of girl whose mother belongs to the jockey club and probably smokes jockey club and, you know, plays bridge and whatever. And Manolito is the son of any one of the, you know, people who are in corner shops. So actually living there gave me a much better sense of what their voices were like and what they were like as people. The French, understandably, had a tendency to explain things to a reader who might not otherwise understand. Whereas, of course, Kino doesn't bother to explain anything to you. In fact, he never even mentions that we are in Buenos Aires. In fact, he never mentions that we're in Argentina. I mean, I have had to do so once or twice in the book because a sense of place is very important to it. But also because there are things that make sense and are funnier if you realize that you're in Argentina.
Yes.
So there is a, you know, when Mafalda and Manolito and Felipe are playing government, and Mafalda obviously is president because she couldn't be anything else. But, you know, in the last strip in that sequence, Manolito and Felipe arrive.
They come to make a planteo. Military commanders who are
military crew, and she said, and she says, get out. Now, in Spanish, all they say is, that's not how it's done. But I've had to say, that's not how we do things in Argentina, madame.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
Of course, you know, I mean, by the time, before he even started drawing Mafalda, Kino had lived through three coups. There were another two plus
more.
That didn't work while he was doing it. And then there was another one, you know, which was the one that eventually forced him to leave Argentina. So
Actually, there is a strip that was drawn on the occasion of the 1966 coup, in which Mafalda is just her face asking to the reader, so everything they taught me at school.
Exactly. And that was the only possible criticism of the coup at the time was this single panel, because actually, you know, journalists were not in a position to do this. And of course, you know, when Kino left, I mean, you know, people sort of suggested, well, I mean, they're hardly going to arrest a cartoonist. They'll arrest anyone. I mean, the editors of his editors were arrested. Various people who were connected with him were arrested after the coup. I mean, during the dirty war, he had every reason to go, and in fact, did not go back until after 83. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, it meant that while on the one hand, Mafalda is shaped by the politics of Latin America and specifically the politics of Argentina, Mafalda then goes on to shape the politics of Latin America and Argentina, because she becomes, you know, a symbol of, you know, freedom, but also, and of course, you know, she is the very... she's very reticent. She asks the questions. She doesn't offer the answers. And part of the, you know, the later introduction of Libertad, she takes an almost sort of maternal role. She's trying to protect this little girl who keeps spouting all of these things that are going to get her killed.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, here in Argentina, when people kind of Mafalda fans like myself, and then everybody thinks, how would these characters look as grown-ups? Everybody thinks that Libertad would have been disappeared during the 1970s dictatorship. And that's the sad part of that character every time you read Libertad's arc.
Yeah. No, I mean, I suspect that Mafalda would also have been disappeared.
Probably.
But Susanita would have been fine. You know, Susanita would have, you know, lived in Recoleta, and she would have had a son who was a doctor, and she would have had whatever. Manolito would have made a killing. You know, he would have worked for whoever the regime happened to be.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what would have happened to Felipe. He's a bit of a dreamer, so he would probably
like an average man. He sounds like a neurotic average man going to the shrink once a week and going to the psicólogo for 10 years.
Of course.
He loses his neurosis.
It's one of the things I loved about living in Buenos Aires. I mean, in every magazine, in every, like, the free magazines that newspapers that they hand out, somewhere at the back it says, you know, you need therapy. Money is not a problem. We'll come to some arrangement. You know, we'll take your liver or your firstborn child. But, you know, but the absolute sort of obsession with, I mean, even more so than New York, Buenos Aires is
with therapy, with psychotherapy.
With psychotherapy.
Absolutely. Now, Frank, I'm in my mid-40s. I discovered Mafalda when I was in grammar school in the 1980s. That's 20 years after it was published. Mm-hmm. My daughter is in grammar school now, and she has read Mafalda entirely now. Mm-hmm. What do you think makes it so timeless and appealing to different generations over and over again?
I think because I think because what Kino does with Mafalda is give us, you know, an unnaturally intelligent six-year-old, but an unnaturally intelligent six-year-old who wants to understand things and cannot understand why nobody can explain them to her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's an extension of what all children do. You know, I mean, at about, you know, three or four, they begin asking why. And so, you know, you can answer as many times as you want and you can explain down to the minutest detail, but they will still come back with why. After that, they ask about big things. And as adults, we don't ask about big things. They happen around us and we don't ask why they're happening. I mean, during the Leo, as she calls it in Vietnam,
It's a mess,
you know. Yeah. It's not a war, it's not anything concrete, it's a mess. You know, Papa, can you explain the mess in Vietnam to me?
Leo in Vietnam, yes.
Yeah, and your problem there is that he hasn't thought about it. Or if he has, he's thinking, you know, I'm much more worried about, you know, bringing in, et cetera. So she's asking all of the questions that, you know, people are surrounded by constantly and then trying to figure out the answers. So of course, when Papa says, you know, I can't explain it to you, you're far too young and yada, yada, yada. And she says, maybe you could leave out all the rude words. Because it's about sex or because it's, you know, whatever. Because, you know, anything that can't be explained to children must be about sex. But I think that, you know, what's interesting, I mean, I was talking to Samantha Schweblin about this last week, and she also, I mean, she read Mafalda when she was six or seven. And of course, there are quite a lot of things. I mean, this was in the early 1980s. She's the same age as you, pretty much. Yeah. So, you know, why would she know what the Vietnam War was, or what, you know, what it was like to live, you know, with the threat of the nuclear bomb or intergalactic?
Yeah, I remember having to ask my parents a lot about some contextual things.
But I think what happens is that, the beauty of Mafalda is that actually you can read it at any age, and the more you read it, the more there is to it. You will understand more. I mean, from my point of view, the markers are fine because actually I'm about 3 years younger than Mafalda. You know, I was born 2 years before Mafalda started being published, so I'm actually 4 years younger than she. But therefore, lots of the things that she grew up questioning are things that, you know, I understood, that I remember, that, you know, all of that, you know, made sense to me. But for lots of people, it doesn't actually matter to a child who's reading now, or indeed to an adult who's reading now, where the war is. Actually, what Mafalda is really asking is, why is there war? At all, ever, you know,
that wonderful applies to any time, to any era.
No, when she you know, when she wakes up on New Year's morning and she says, so that's it, no more war, no more famine, no more drought. Papa, who of course doesn't have a name, says, no, I don't think so, Mafalda. And she says, well, what's the point in having a new year then? And again, what is the point in having a new year if we're not dealing with the big things? You know, if we're not dealing with the things And of course, her foils then are, you know, the people around her who, again, are archetypes. I mean, yes, I know that, you know, obviously, if you live in Argentina and you happen to know a rather stuck up, shallow woman who's only interested in getting married, you can say, eres muy Susanita.
Sí. Re Susanita, like that. All she thinks about is getting married. She doesn't want to have a career or something.
No. She doesn't want anything. And of course, you know, I mean, when Mafalda finally says, I mean, don't you want anything else? She said, yeah, I could learn bridge, you know. Okay, so fine, you know. Yeah. But again, I mean, I think even without understanding some of the concepts that children completely understand it, and for adults, of course, nothing has changed. The fact that the war is now in Ukraine or in Gaza, or the fact that, you know, the threat of nuclear annihilation is now from Iran or from elsewhere, doesn't change the fact that the questions that she's asking and the way in which she responds to them are completely timeless. You know, I mean, we don't, you know, the great fear of communism in certain countries during the 1960s has somehow passed, but the wonderful thing where, you know, her mother tells her that if she doesn't, you know, eat her soup, that she won't grow up. And she thinks, what if Karl Marx had never eaten his soup? You know, it doesn't matter. You know, you get the joke, even if Karl Marx is no longer the major bogeyman to what you're doing. By the time you were reading her, let alone people reading her now, many of these things change. I mean, the thing I would have thought you know, a child reading her now is going to find most surprising is how shocked she is when they have a television delivered.
Oh, yes, yes. That's I wanted to talk about that. I mean, the contextual, the context, how do you adapt that when the TV part or the guardapolvos, the white coats that the children use in school? How do you explain that? There is no explanation. That happens in an elementary public school of Argentina. That has that mandatory uniform still today in the 21st century.
No, you can't. Look, there are things that you don't explain and you have to accept the context in which it's in. There are things where I will adapt. So, for example, the sequence about Los Reyes Magos, I have to adapt so that it becomes Santa Claus or Father Christmas, because actually outside of Argentina and maybe two other countries, people get their gifts at Christmas from Father Christmas. Mm-hmm. And also, we don't even call them kings. We call them wise men.
Or magi.
So we have, so there are times like that where I need to adapt. And then there are times when I have to adapt because Kino likes to play with language. Mm-hmm. And you can't play with words in the words are not going to be workable in the same way. So there is a strip where, you know, Mafalda has been given a glass of milk by her mother, and she says, "Mama, hay nata en mi leche. Nunca le dices antes de dármelo. Estás contra el control de la natalidad."
Yeah, that's hilarious. Course, you know, in Spanish, that works in Spanish.
Of course, and you know, brilliantly, you know, Mafalda has made up this word that she thinks means creaminess, but in fact means birth.
Birth control.
So it's
about
birth control. So I have to look at this and think, okay, what can I do? So I think, okay, fine. Let's assume that this is hot milk rather than cold milk. So if you have hot milk and you take time serving it, it forms a skin
on the top. Yeah. Okay, is not pleasant when you drink.
So she says, Mama, there's skin on my hot milk. Do you even check before you give it to me? Or aren't you worried about skinheads?
Yeah.
And again, skinheads is a completely different thing to worry about. Again, she thinks she's talking about the skin on the milk, and her mother thinks that she's talking about skinheads.
Yeah.
You know, as a sort of fascist group.
I read another sample in which you convert Mato Grosso, I mean, that strip Mafalda is answering, is guessing where his father is from.
And so I say Utah.
You say Utah instead of Mato Grosso as a representation of a place without, modern technology.
Yes, where nothing happens, where they have no technology. No, again, you know, normally I would like to keep something, but saying Mato Grosso isn't going to help because nobody's going to know where it is. But also they don't know what it signifies. Yeah. The point is not the place. The point is that it signifies, you know, the boondocks, which is, you know, somewhere where nobody has anything. There are times when I have no choice but to do that. But
another example is Mafalda. It doesn't happen anymore here in Argentina. Mafalda's got this rejection of soup because generations ago here in Argentina, soup was kind of a mandatory everyday meal that every meal started with here. And children did not like. I mean, it's not something you would have eventually you would have soup every single time, and children would get bored of that. But that's one of the reasons Mafalda hates soup. But you replaced soup with greens, which has the same effect for American children, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's soup, sometimes it's greens. But I need sometimes to make it greens because it has to be something that children find unpleasant and will generally not eat.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I grew up at much the same time as Mafalda, so we had a lot of soup. And like Mafalda, I remember when soup first started to come in cubitos, in cubes. And I love Mafalda's thing, you know,
yes.
Mathematics, how could you have betrayed me? You know?
Yes.
Because
yes,
of course she loves baths and she loves geometry. And, you know, here geometry has betrayed her by putting soup, making it even. But also, you know, when she discreetly tears away her mother's recipe for fish soup. And Mafalda says, down with freedom of the press, you know. And of course she is, you know, in favor of freedom of the press. But so much of what is there is liminal, you know. Censorship is sort of mentioned, but the only strip in which it appears is one where you have a wall with graffiti on it that is supposed to say abajo la censura, but actually says abajo la censura,
because the guy's abajo being chased.
Yeah, because the guy's already being. Yeah.
How did you do that?
I haven't got that far yet.
That'll be
easy enough. Once I get there, that's not going to be hard. No, the harder ones are either ones that are very specific to the culture. I mean, thankfully, no one drinks mate in Mafalda.
That
would be a very long.
Yeah, I think Kino did not like mate, but the absence of mate, mate is mentioned in a couple of, but it's not shown, but no. that helped it make more international in the Spanish speaking world.
Of course, because, you know, I have translated a number of Argentinian novels and they regularly feature mate, and, you know, you can't change this, nor can you explain what a bombilla is. You just have to call it a bombilla because, you know, I mean, it's kind of a straw, but actually by and large, it's a straw with a little pan at the bottom with small holes in it to stop the leaves getting, you know, it's too complicated. You just say mate and let it go. But no, when things are very culturally specific, but usefully, like I said, Mafalda is political with a small p. It is not as though... I mean, it's not even as though any single person is mentioned, but political parties aren't mentioned or tendencies aren't mentioned. I mean, the closest we get to any form of ideology is, you know, very vague notions of democracy, communism, and capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much, you know, everything that you've got. And of course, everything that influences those are, you know, whatever she happens to read. So, of course, when she's trying to explain to Felipe that she's finally worked out the war in Vietnam and the North Vietnamese are fighting the South Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese are fighting the Americans who are fighting the Reds. And Felipe says, oh, I've got Reds in the Lone Ranger. And she goes, oh, my God, Native Americans are all communists. Because, of course, you know, if these are Reds and those are Reds, then, you know, why would they be the same thing?
Speaking of hard things to translate, how are you going to deal with – there are a couple of trips which – I remember my daughter being shocked at Susanita being openly racist at times, going to wash her finger after touching a doll.
Interestingly, that page does not appear in that first book, and it should. I translated it. We had a conversation. They said, well, you know, children would find this offensive. I said,
yes,
but it was not actually written for children. I mean, it was, you know, but also my father, you know, to ignore the racism of Susanita. And of course, what Susanita is doing is, of course, pretending not to be racist. She spends all of her time saying, no, I think everybody's equal. And then I'm going to wash my finger.
Yes.
And It's funny and it's horrible, and therefore it should remain there. But I can also understand that, you know, there are conversations, there are jokes, in fact, that would have been made in order to make fun of racism in the 1960s that we can't make now, because no one would realize that what you were trying to do was make fun of racism. Mm-hmm. They think actually you're being racist.
Yes, yes. I mean, just the image of somebody going to wash their finger after touching a black doll is...
You have a later one, which is a similar thing, which didn't get laughed at, which is, you know, when Susanita decides that Manolito's older brother, you know, has just come back from the army, and she imagines he's a cadet and he's been going to balls and dancing with women, but actually he's a draftee, he's a conscript. And she said, I don't like conscripts.
That's disgusting.
Exactly. And then Mafalda says, you know, she's talking to Manolito and Felipe. She says, you know, what would she do if she lived somewhere like Israel, where even, you know, women have to be in the army? And Susanita pops up from behind a rock and she says, I'd be anti-Semitic.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And again, that feels much more shocking now.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's even more shocking.
At the time, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, you know, I mean, a lot of the points, it's one of the things in which, and I've said this in a couple of things, that Mafalda is fundamentally different. So there is only literally one political moment in all of Charles Schulz's Peanuts, and it happens in about 1966, and it is the introduction of a character called Franklin, who's black.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A black woman in the United States had written to Charles Schulz and asked him to include a black character. And he said, look, I've been thinking about it, but I kind of worry that, you know, obviously I'm not black and yada, yada. And she said, look, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's about representation. And interestingly, you know, Franklin arrives. It's a 3-panel strip. He meets Linus. He says, hi, I'm Franklin. Linus says, I'm Linus. Pleased to meet you. And then they start talking about the fact that both of their fathers fought in Korea. And Franklin exists in that strip, even though race is never discussed. And the fact that Franklin is black is never discussed, despite the fact that all of those strips were going on during the civil rights movement in the United States. So technically, I mean, I don't know, I can't remember whether we ever see Franklin in school, but of course, black children, by and large, certainly in the American South, were not allowed to go to the same schools that white children went to until the late 60s. And even then, they had to bring in the National Guard to force schools to accept, to be open to everyone. But Mafalda is different in that respect. She is entirely aware of the world around her, whether that is, you know, whether that is the Vietnam War, but also, you know, I mean, the wonderful reaction when she first shows an intercontinental ballistic missile to Susanita, who says, oh, it looks just like a lipstick, you know. Yes. Of course, that's what she's going to think, you know.
Yeah.
And her interest in space and her interest in the cosmos. And I mean, there are other times when, again, I need to make it clear we're in Argentina, because Felipe goes through a period where he's worried about the plummeting currency of the peso. And, and at some point I have to actually mention where we are, because, this is something that is crucially important within the history of Argentina, but not of like every country throughout the world. I mean, similarly, you know, at some point, you know, Felipe, when during the brief period when they're worried about UFOs, and he's trying to make peace with the aliens, even though he doesn't believe in them. So he's talking to them, even though, you know, I don't believe you're there, but it can't hurt to, you know, stay on their good side. Mm-hmm. But he refers to, you know, his country as, you know, a third world country or a developed country.
Thanks for making the whole world look underdeveloped. Yeah. It saved our reputation.
Yeah, exactly. Which is lovely.
I read the sample and it got me out laughing. I mean, it totally worked. I'm going to read Mafalda again in English, because I can tell you, I mean, it definitely works in English. Just it works in Spanish.
Well, yes. And the thing is, a lot of the time, so the things you need to do, you need to think about, it needs to be funny in the same way. But also I need to use Kino's bubbles. So I need to fill them in the same way. So in order to letter them. So, these days, if you create comics or you write or draw comics, I worked in comics for 10 years. And back then we had letterers. Lots of people, did lettering for a living. That was their job. These days, most people will actually use fonts, and you can get hundreds of fonts that you can get. And I tried dozens of them and none of them worked. So in the end, I scanned every single letter that Kino ever drew in about 9 different versions, and I created my own font. Mm-hmm. So that actually the lettering is his lettering, because everything else I used just didn't work. Mm-hmm. You just scan them all. And so I have all these keys like shift, alt, control, exclamation mark is that big exclamation mark that he does with the outline. And other ones that are other things. And I have versions that are bold, and I have versions that are fat, and versions that are that stereophonic thing that he has that he does, because actually they preserve as much as anything, because he hand lettered everything. The only alternative would have been to pay someone to letter. And these days, nobody's prepared to pay anyone to do that kind of work, because they think, we'll just use a font. It'll be fine. It's not fine, because actually Kino's writing is very specific. Where he puts his question marks and exclamation marks, and how many times he uses those 3 dots, which are crucial to how he tells jokes, is actually really, really important. I think having lived there and knowing both the city and the people reasonably well, makes it a lot easier to know what these people sound like. And when I say I know what they sound like in Spanish, but also I know then, because I know I have a sense of exactly who they are within, what schools they would have gone to and what they would have wanted to be when they grew up.
Sorry, Frank. I work on Rai, and translating is part of my regular job. I kind of do a guided tour of Argentina on the radio every day, because we talk about Argentine news and features and geography and history and music, but explain to foreigners elsewhere. So I have to add a lot of context that is completely unnecessary for Argentine listeners. So and sometimes I find that super challenging, and sometimes I just admit my failure. For example, when I attempt to translate some tango lyrics. But I read in one of the interviews, one of the interviews you gave doing research for this talk, that you said that you read Mafalda so much that you kind of appropriated or incorporated her voice to the point of knowing what she's going to say to any situation.
I think at the end of the day, when you are translating, by the time you are finished, by the time you've done your third draft or your fourth draft or whatever, you stop reading against the original and you say, would my character say this? Because now this is my character. Yes, of course it is Kino's Mafalda, but I have had to internalize that. I need to create a voice, and then I need to know, would the 6-year-old girl that I have, whose voice I'm writing, do this? And, usefully I had been able to, I translated a number of Argentinian novels before this, which are, significantly more difficult in terms of what they're doing structurally, including the fact that they have included tango lyrics. I translated a novel by Matias Nesporo called Siete Maneras de Matar a un Gato, which takes place in Barrio 42. And so is, attempting to keep a sense of place so that it doesn't sound like I'm situating this in Baltimore or Chicago or Brixton or Toxteth or, you know, wherever, like somewhere. I'm not trying to find an equivalence. What I'm trying to do is to actually conjure a sense of where we are. And so, for example, I mean, they, like almost everyone in Argentina, they refer to each other by nicknames. They call each other, they are gringo, chueco, pibe, etc., etc. There's no point in me translating those names. If I do that, then they stop being Argentinian and they start being something else. But also, I mean, there are words that you keep and there are references that you keep, and you have to trust that readers are intelligent enough to understand in context. Because actually, reading in our own languages, whether I'm reading in English or in whatever, we frequently come across things, you know, that where you don't necessarily know what this word is or what this is describing. If you're reading a historical novel, there will be passages in it where you're thinking, yeah, I kind of know what I think. Okay, so one of the greatest problems for translation from Spanishes, and I always translate from Spanishes plural because they're so different from each other, into English as plural. But one of the most complex thing to explain is a mesa camilla.
Me?
Mesa camilla.
Mesa camilla. So camilla.
Yeah. These like do not exist outside of the Spanish
stretcher.
No. A mesa camilla is a small thing that you put under. It's a table that has a small charcoal heater in the bottom of it. And in winter, you light the charcoal heater and you put your cover over your knees.
Oh, yeah. They have that in Spain. Yeah.
So in Spain, that's a big deal. They crop up all the time. Yeah. I can't call them anything except a mesa camilla, because we don't have them. We do, you know, they don't exist. But also you need to work out what people call things so for example, I would not translate morcilla as black pudding.
Or
I would call it blood sausage. Okay. Or I would actually usually just say morcilla, because actually it is not. I've eaten black pudding. I have eaten morcilla. They're not remotely the same. morcilla, you cut the morcilla and everything just goes.
Yeah.
You cut black pudding and it stays there. You know.
Yeah. It's like a black salami.
Yeah, it's like a black salami, exactly. I provide as little context as possible, but there are times when I will do something which translators call stealth glossing, which means that you insert one word or something somewhere in order to make it easier so that the reader doesn't stop and think, what's that? So it often happens, for example, if... So it's fine that, you know, Felipe spends his time, you know, reading The Lone Ranger. But, you know, if you mention an actor who is, as it were, famous in Argentina or in Mexico or whatever, then at some point I will mention, I mean, maybe not in that bubble, but somewhere I will make it clear that this is an actor, because otherwise it's just a name nobody knows.
Yes.
What I'm not going to do is change the name for a name that people know. Because then it stops being culturally the same thing. You know, I can't change, you know, a Mexican actor into John Wayne or into whatever, because you're losing the sense of place of where you are and what you're doing. And I think translation owes it to, I mean, both to the reader and absolutely to the writer, to preserve as much of the sense of place as is there. And one of the great things about living in Buenos Aires is while you don't get an awful lot of street scenes in Mafalda, but actually when you do, I can absolutely recognize them. Whereas actually before I'd been there, you know, why would I recognize them?
Mafalda can be anywhere in Buenos Aires. I mean, those cobblestone streets and the squares, it looks totally familiar to any porteño, but it's also universal. Mafalda is an example of that Leo Tolstoy lie, no? Paint your village and become universal, isn't it?
Well, yes, but it's also Mafalda is also a perfect embodiment of Tolstoy's line: "All happy families are alike; each unhappy family is unhappy in their own way." because actually, this is—I mean, her family isn't terribly dysfunctional, but as their local pharmacist points out, you know, Nervocalm plays a very crucial role in the stability
in that family. Yes,
you know, yes. I mean, for the mother, for the father, and of course for Felipe when he's waiting for Los Reyes. You know,
they get him a dose of Nervocalm.
Yeah, exactly. And it's things. But no, well, I mean, I think it's extraordinary that Mafalda hasn't happened before now in English, but I am extraordinarily glad, A, that it's happening now, and B, that I'm the one who gets to do it.
Congratulations.
Because if I didn't, I would simply read it and think, I wouldn't have done it like that.
Good. And I only trust myself to, as a Mafalda fan, I wanted a Mafalda fan to translate it.
It can't just be anyone. It can't be some random person who doesn't care. It's where it's just a
dog. Absolutely.
It has to be something that genuinely matters to you, because it is an entire world in a very, very small, each four squares, you know, is its own thing. It is, each four squares needs to be its own short story, and it doesn't matter, you know, there are lots of things that will continue, you know, so that, you know, when they start, when they do the thing about telepathy and whatever, that continues, you know, over several strips. But each of those strips needs to be on its own. If you took it on its own, it still needs to work. It still needs to be funny or thoughtful or full of wonder. You can't just think, oh, well, I'll deal with that in the next strip. That's not how strip cartoons work. And it's why they're very different from graphic novels or from comics, where, you know, yes, we can, and even if I'm translating a novel, you know, if there's a piece of information that I need to get in and I can't put it here, I can think about, okay, well, you know, what I can do is, you know, when this person replies or when this, you know, et cetera, or I can let someone know beforehand where we're going. You can't do that in strip cartoons because you have exactly as much space as the original writer had, and you have to fill all of it.
Yeah.
But you also have to fill all of it without making it all cramped and, you know, putting too many words in. It has to seem entirely natural, as though actually these balloons were all drawn for the strip as it works in English.
Well, Frank, I'm so happy we had this conversation. I'm very grateful for your time. This has been amazing. Congratulations. I love Mafalda. I can see that you love her too.
Oh no, yeah.
I'm grateful that you've taken this national icon of us to the English speaking world now.
Her arrival is long overdue, but I hope that, the thing is, like anything about which you really care, I deeply envy people who are now going to read her for the first time.
Yes. Of course. Well, that's one of the reasons I want to read it in English, because it's going to feel like a first time.
Exactly.
Again, I was reading a couple of samples, and the one with Felipe saying that that's hilarious, that he's happy that he shares his ignorance with scientists,
and
he feels good about that.
Exactly.
That works and got me out laughing again, like 30-40 years ago later.
Frank, okay, it was lovely to talk to you, Fernando, perhaps we'll speak again when I get to the end of volume 10.
Excellent. Let's stay in touch and have another talk and give me a ring when you're in Buenos Aires.
I will do. Okay.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that was a talk that we recorded back in June with Frank Wynn, who worked on the translation into English of Mafalda, first volume, as you just heard. He's going to be working on all 10 volumes, but the first one is already available in the US, and I suppose in the UK, if not now, maybe very soon. But if you are in the US, go out and check out Mafalda and see if you can find a copy at your nearest bookstore or order it online. And you'll discover a very lovable character. You'll have a good time, I guarantee that. With at least a couple of strips, I'm pretty sure you're gonna enjoy some of Mafalda, now in English, thanks to Frank Nguyen, among others. And since we've got some time, let's play something by Mafalda's favorite band, which is no other than The Beatles. And here's a song with vocals by Ringo, Yellow Submarine.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found a sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
Submarine, it's difficult to resist the urge, the temptation to join in and sing along this classic tune, Yellow Submarine, one of the many, 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 many classics anthems that were recorded by the Beatles that we played on the occasion of sharing this interview with Frank Nguyen, who translated Mafalda into English. And Mafalda, as I said before, had a favorite band, which were the Beatles. This marks the end of today's edition of RAE in English. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio. My name is Fernando Farias. Hope you enjoyed today's program. Thank you very much for listening. The show airs via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. For emails, qslrae@gmail.com. For letters, Maipú 555, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Thank you for listening again. Join us tomorrow for a new show of RAE in English. Ciao.